and the others at the 2019 Left Forum and be part of a conversation about radically imagining and building a different future. Make a pledge of $50 today and lock in your free weekend pass to the Left Forum, taking place in Brooklyn June 28th through June 30th. That's the 28th through the 30th in Brooklyn. Go to give, then the numeral 2, WBAI.org. That's give to WBAI.org and search Left Forum. Thanks for your support and thanks for listening. See you at the Left Forum.
Yeah, okay, it's 7 o'clock. And you're listening to WBAI New York, 99.5 FM. It's 7:01, and that means it's time for Off the Hook. Very good evening to everybody. The program is Off the Hook here on WBAI. Emmanuel Goldstein here with you on this Wednesday evening, right in the middle of rush hour. Joined by Rob T. Firefly.
Good evening.
I'm sorry, say it again. The microphone is not quite
good
up.
Good evening.
Is that a new microphone?
It might be.
What's
no,
new?
No. I think it's just been shined up a
looks
little.
Better than mine.
Hmm.
Alex is here.
Good evening as well.
And Kyle. Good evening.
No.
Nice try, Alex. Kyle's still parking the car. Boy, it's tight getting in here. There are so many people on the road, and I apologize to most of them for the things that we might have said as we were speeding by. But, you know, everyone is driving at the same time. How do you guys feel about maybe, let's do this a little bit later. In fact, you know, This is just the last straw because it's too crowded out there. It's too much of a hassle. If we were on, say, was it 7 o'clock now? If we were on at 8 o'clock, wouldn't that be better? I think that would be better. You know, and we wouldn't have to deal with rush hour. We could relax a little more. And I think people are also, you know, they're finished with dinner and they get to relax by the radio like people do. I think this might be a better thing overall. What do you think?
Well, for me, it was always difficult to leave the office early enough to get here.
Uh-huh,
you know,
yeah.
By 7 p.m., I'd bring the dogs to the office. I got to walk all the way home.
Dogs, yeah.
They
have dogs. It's almost impossible if you have dogs.
You know, the 7 p.m. hour has become a real hassle. I've gotten used to it, but I think, you know, if we pushed it back a little bit, I'd probably be kind of happy with that.
Yeah.
But let me
I'd be almost delirious.
But let me ask you something. I don't understand why you have so much trouble with the trail. You're supposed to be going against the traffic, right?
Yeah, well, that doesn't work anymore. The traffic is going all different directions. So,
it's everywhere.
It's everywhere. You can't hide it. Okay, so no, I'm glad. This is, folks, this is how you work things out. Okay, you brainstorm. You see a problem. You tackle it. There's always a solution someplace. That's what I've been taught in the hacker community. So now we just have to fill the slot for next week from 7 to 8. Well, actually, you know, I assume whoever is on 8 won't have any trouble yielding to us, so we're just going to take that slot over. You know what I would like to hear at 7 o'clock? I'd like to hear a program from a feminist perspective. We don't have enough of that. You might find that funny, that BAI doesn't have enough of it, but it's true. We could use more. something like, I don't know, we won't go back, women fight back, something like that. That's just, you know, I'm just spitballing, but that's, you know, that would be a great, and I know there are so many qualified people who are out there who would be so qualified to do a show like that. So let's just assume that next week we will have no trouble having a show called that on at this time, and we will just move to 8 o'clock. Kyle, we just sort of redid the schedule while you were out parking the car.
Can we be on at 8, please?
No, we are. No, we see, you read my mind. We're on at 8.
I was just thinking that might work
There's
better.
A new show that is going to be formulated, and it's going to be awesome. It'll be on next week at this time.
They have the same name as our show, right?
No, they don't have the same name as our show. It's called Women Fight Back. That's not what we're called.
Oh, okay. So, I thought it was Hackers Fight Back.
No.
That's a different
show. No, that will be the show. But, 8 o'clock next week, be there. That's when we're going to be on.
Sounds good.
Yeah. I like how we did this without consulting anybody.
I mean, you think you got enough juice to get this done? I mean, I know you've been around
BAI. What's that supposed to
be? It's not about juice, Alex. It's not about juice.
I have enough energy. I can stay up that late, if that's what you're implying.
Is it about milk? You got enough milk? I don't understand. It's the audience. It's the audience. They compel these decisions, okay?
Yes.
It's out of our hands. Our hands are tied. Our hands are...
Yeah, why is that exactly? That makes it so much more difficult.
Invisible. Our hands are... in a velvet glove, our hands aren't the issue. The issue is
drink my juice with that
what people want.
Well, the thing is, change is a good thing. So this is a good change. We're looking forward to it. We'll have a better drive, and we'll have another awesome program here on WBAI.
Yeah, I mean, alert listeners might remember in the halcyon days of 2018 when we were on at 8 o'clock on Wednesday nights. And, you know, I remember the leisurely commutes to the studio, you know, just stretching my legs.
Yeah, a little too leisurely. Sometimes
some
you showed
cream.
Up at 10:30, so maybe we step on it a little bit.
I'll work on it.
Yeah. Okay.
Well, you know, I think it's about being agile and nimble. This is the adaptable nature of hackers, and that does not stop when you're talking about a hacker radio show. So we're gonna be there. Or B square.
Yeah.
So is it settled, 8 p.m. next week?
Well, as far as we're concerned, it's settled. So let's just hope that that's how everybody else feels. And, we'll be on at 8 o'clock. But you know what? I think we should give our listeners, our 7 to 8 listeners, the ones who cannot possibly listen before 7 or after 8, the opportunity to call in tonight and wish us well. If you are steadfastly not going to listen at 8 o'clock. We can't talk to the people who are only listening between 8 and 9 because we haven't met them yet, but that'll happen next week, I guess. Write down the phone number. It's 212-209-2877, and we'll be opening up those phone lines in just a little bit so you can call up and tell us how you feel about this and anything else that might be on your mind as far as technology, hacking, the Internet, anything on those subjects that we want to focus on this our last 7 o'clock show?
Well, it is. I mean, it seems, I think, kind of fitting to read this sort of futuristic opinion editorial piece that Cory Doctorow wrote just a few days ago on the 24th of June.
I think I saw that in the New York Times, right?
Yeah, this is a really interesting thing that they're doing with the New York Times, which is, you know, it's part of this series called Op-Eds from the Future.
Yeah, it confused some people. If you read the comments, it confused a lot of people, actually, because they didn't know it was from the future. And it was mentioned in the New York Times, and some people were just, oh, my God, did that really happen? And
well, it says it right up front. I mean, this is the problem with, I think, society
just
today.
Just because something is said right up front, you really think that's enough to make people understand it?
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Definitely. I mean,
you know, how many people are going to be tuning in at 7 o'clock next week expecting to hear us?
What do we need? You know, an animated GIF or GIF? You call them GIFs, right?
Yeah, we haven't even settled
GIF,
that.
You know, I mean, if we can't get that right, no. How are we going to get content filtering things? But in any event, so there's a series of op-eds. In the New York Times, where science fiction authors, futurists, philosophers, scientists write op-eds that they imagine they might write 10, 20, or even 100 years from now.
Do we still have philosophers walking around? That's
yeah,
a thing?
Sure, absolutely.
Are there people paid to be philosophers, like, you know, back in the days of Plato?
Yeah, I mean, most of them are academics. That's it, huh. Academics, authors. You know, I have a degree in philosophy.
Yeah, but you don't make money at that.
You'd be surprised.
I might be.
This might be a non sequitur, but are there people that spell out GIF, like G-I-F.
Oh, Kyle, get over it.
Well,
God's sake, it's in the past.
But why are PDFs, why do we spell out PDFs?
Because you can't pronounce PDF. There's no vowel
in it. A PDF?
All right, you go around saying PDIF and see how many
PDIF?
friends
that's how you say it, PDIF. Uh-huh.
This is what a semantic philosopher might call an epistemological conundrum.
Forget it.
So
forget
we'll get back to the...
There's people in rush hour traffic now listening to this. We can't have that. We can't have that.
That's true.
People have to be relaxed, sitting by their old-time radio, listening at home.
I'm still going to say GIF.
With a sherry or something, you know.
So back to the op editorial. This is essentially, you know, the written word of, equivalent of things like Black Mirror, which I think is a really cool idea for the New York Times to publish. So Cory Doctorow, you know, friend of the station, friend of Hope, friend of 2600, a friend of all of ours that we hung out with at the Strand a couple of weeks ago.
Enemy to the right people, though. That's just
an enemy to the right
friend
people.
Of everybody.
That's right.
Yeah,
well, he's friendly to a lot of people and unfriendly to probably more people than he's friendly to.
Hopefully.
Yes.
That's a good way to live, I think.
I hope so.
But when he speaks about the future, he's sort of speaking about the present. It's sort of a future-present voice because it's observational, right?
Yes, it is. And his op-ed is hypothetically set only 10 years in the future.
Oh, my God.
Which is really quite interesting, actually, because he touches on a lot of very interesting topics like publishing, immunity for platforms like Twitter and Facebook, algorithmic filters to identify questionable content, something that we talk about all the time, and freedom of the press. So, you know, with the knowledge and the preface that all of this is hypothetically set in the future, I'll read a few choice bits from this to the listeners. 10 years ago, he writes, I could have published this on my own personal website or shared it on one of the big social media platforms, but that was before the United States government decided to regulate both the social media platforms and blogging sites as if they were newspapers, making them legally responsible for the content that they published. The move was spurred on by an unholy and unlikely coalition of media companies crying copyright, national security experts wringing their hands about terrorism, and people who were dismayed that our digital public squares had become infested by fascists, harassers, and cyber criminals. Sound familiar?
A little bit, yeah.
Yeah. Bit by bit, the legal immunity of the platforms was eroded, from the judges who put Facebook on the line for the platform's inaction during the Provo uprising to the lawmakers who amended Section 230 of the Communications Decency Act in a bid to get Twitter to clean up its Nazi problems. He goes on, and this is where I think it gets really quite interesting, you know, where he talks about, you know, the platforms couldn't really make a dent in the fascist problem. He says they couldn't help to... they couldn't hope to make a dent in their users' personal expressions. From YouTube's 2,000 hours of video uploaded every minute to Facebook-Weibo's 3 billion daily updates, meaning, you know, Facebook and Weibo had merged in 10 years' time, there was no scalable way to carefully examine the contributions of every user and assess whether they violated any of these new laws. So the platforms fixed this the Silicon Valley way. They automated it.
Oh, my God.
Badly.
Well, they've already done that, though. Things are automated so badly that you get no satisfaction and you get all kinds of bizarre decisions.
That's why I say future present, because as prescriptive as it is, and I read it as very real because so much of it was based in parallel to a lot of things we've reported and experienced in the last couple of years.
Oh, no doubt.
Or decades and
no,
so on.
No doubt. I mean, and this is where I think it gets very relevant to what we've been discussing on this program for a while now, as Kyle mentioned. He writes, the platforms and personal websites are fine if you want to talk about sports, relate your kids' latest escapades, or shop, but if you want to write something about how the platforms and government legislation can't tell the difference between sex trafficking and sex, nudity and pornography, terrorism investigations and terrorism itself, or copyright infringement and parody, you're out of luck. Any one of those keywords will give the filters an incurable case of machine anxiety. But all of them together? Forget about it.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, this is exactly the problem that we're facing right now with the European directive's efforts to engage in copyright filtering on a massive scale in the EU, you know, a measure that has been proposed to, you know, what some people on this show had espoused themselves, which is, you know, the censorship and deplatforming of fascism and Nazism and expecting social media companies to jump in and become self-censors on their platforms. And, you know, other legislative efforts to take away the platform immunity that they have under the Communications Decency Act. I think this is a really great op editorial that I think every one of our listeners that's interested in this, which I imagine would be every one of our listeners, should really take a read of, because it's so well done, and I think Cory Doctorow just has this innate, natural ability to slice away the fat on these issues And, you know, op-eds for the Times, they're not really that long. You know, we probably read half the piece on the air right now.
Mm-hmm.
We don't want to violate copyright, right, because we're reporting on this. You know, it's fair use. But, you know, God forbid we do something to anger the New York Times. But it's I think it's a fantastically well-written piece in the era of, or rather in the style of a kind of Black Mirror op editorial. So very, very cool stuff.
I did notice a lot of pushback, though, in the comments. And the comments in the New York Times generally are more intelligent than most other places. But a lot of people seem to be resisting the idea that there shouldn't be people have more of a power to make a decision as to what's acceptable and what's not, i.e. an editor of, say, a newspaper or something like that. I'm not sure if that's the message that he was putting forth, but I think this idea of everybody's a publisher, everybody's a journalist, I think that's fundamentally flawed because everybody clearly is not. A lot of uninformed people, a lot of ignorant people, a lot of malicious people, and I don't think everybody is equal. And if you give everybody the same voice, the same platform, you wind up with a situation like what we're experiencing right now.
I feel like the same way about photography. Like, just because everyone has a camera doesn't necessarily mean everyone is a great photographer. And I think people are kidding themselves if they think that you know, the best way to get information is to not have something that is curated and edited, and they don't really appreciate perhaps how much of the things they consume are curated by people who really take it seriously and do an excellent job presenting it to them in a consumable form. And the one other attribute I'm hearing in this is that Corey illustrates the slippery slope that we're facing without condemning it, I think. He's pointing it out, but he's not condemning the temptation that I think is illustrated, that a lot of people are entertaining and perhaps pushing for in this current political sociocultural climate.
I think one thing we all can agree on is that we don't have the answer yet. It has not quite been figured out. The people running the corporations, the people using these systems, us, we're all theorizing as to what is the best way, because this has never happened before. We've never had this kind of a scenario. But I do think that it's important to realize that social media platforms are not the same thing as curated publications, and they shouldn't be. There's no reason to equate the two. They're different elements, and they're different important elements as well. What social media, what people writing their own blogs without any kind of oversight are doing is providing alternative voices and oftentimes opening up doors into places that we would not go ordinarily. But you can't say it's equivalent to a piece in the New York Times or, you know, something that has been researched by somebody who spent months, if not longer, putting together a story. I think once you start doing that, you minimize the actual work, and then everything becomes valid, and you have all kinds of flat earth theories going around, apologies to those people. Yes, your opinion is... No, your opinion doesn't count. I'm sorry. not to me. I want to get angry mail from flat earth people. I do. I really do. But you know, I think there are definitely differences, but there are also certain values in these new technologies, in these new ways of expressing ourselves. Now, you know, a company has every right to do whatever they want. It's their platform. So if they say, you know, you're not allowed to discuss this subject, and if you do, you'll get kicked off. Well, it's their ball, and they can take it and go home. You don't have to use it. You can start something better. But when you make it so that only the big players have the power, then someone can come along and compete. Someone can come along and do it better. So you have to make sure that playing field remains level, that you know, the Twitters and the Facebooks don't get an unfair advantage where, okay, they got there early, so now they can have this and no one else has any chance because they're too small. No, that has to remain open, because that's the only way you improve things and you do a better job.
Well, I think one of the things that he's hitting at is exactly what you were talking about here, which is that if you force the companies to make these judgment calls, you know, we already read the bit where he said, first we tried to do this algorithmically, and it ended very badly. Mm-hmm. But then if you force them to make these judgment calls and you rely on human beings to make these judgment calls, it's just not scalable. If half of the planet is on Facebook, if you have 3 billion people posting all kinds of nonsense all the time, it is just impossible to police that. It's impossible to censor it. It's, you know, literally shoveling excrement against the tide here, because it's just not a scalable solution to an endemic problem. There's still going to be fascism there. The algorithms are going to underblock what they're supposed to block. The judgment calls aren't going to be made properly. The rules and the policies that we've seen coming out in news reports about Facebook and the morass of rules and regulations when it comes to questionable content, and especially things like white nationalism, you know, have been all over the place and ridiculously difficult to follow. So it's this idea of scalability being a very, very big problem for these particular platforms. And he also gets to the idea of, well, if we had seen this coming 10 years ago, if we had enforced our antitrust laws, if he had prevented Google and Facebook and these other large conglomerates from swallowing up all of these startups, then just like you said, Emmanuel, and he mentions this in the article, you know, perhaps we would have had a different internet now.
Yeah, that is definitely something we should have been on top of on this show. I know we were urging the powers that be to not let these mega corporations come together and take everything over, because now you have mega problems.
And these aren't there really aren't easy answers to this. There are things like the Fediverse, open source social media, which we've discussed on this program. We ourselves have a Mastodon account on Hacker Radio Show at mastodon.social, which is the open source decentralized Twitter clone. Even over there is a right-wing platform, alt-right platform, Nazi platform that I won't dignify by naming it on the air, but it's well-known. And they had their own app rejected from the Apple Store and the Google Store and everything else. So what they've done is forked the Mastodon project. So they're using this open-source project to basically launch their own decentralized thing, which anybody can connect to with any Fediverse-compatible apps on their phone, so they can't be blocked that way. And that has so many people in the Fediverse talking about, like, well, maybe we should start thinking about blocking these at maybe the app level or the protocol level or something. For a system that really thrives by its interconnectivity, people are like really scratching their heads trying to find the best answers for all concerned about this. Not even the world of free decentralized alternatives is free from this sort of mess.
Well, it's possible that when these things were developed, people were a bit too idealistic and too optimistic about the nature of humanity. Now that we have had a wake-up call and we see just how evil and horrible people can be, maybe we need to think about it differently. Maybe we need to come up with different ways of doing things. One idea I had, you know, a lot of the problems that we are constantly seeing, it's based on algorithms. It's based on, you know, you watch a hateful video on YouTube, and YouTube says, hey, you like that? You'll like this too. Well, how about we just change the philosophy of those algorithms? And instead of saying, here's something that's like what you saw before, how about, here's something that's very different from what you just saw? And maybe that'll open up your eyes to something else, a different perspective. What if that was what we were pressuring the technology companies to do? Change the philosophy of the algorithm.
I mean, it's quite possible. I mean, on the one hand, yeah, it would undermine the echo chamber that these social media companies love to create, which is feeding you more and more of what you like, right? But then also, on the other hand, it might be good in increasing engagement, showing you something that you don't necessarily like, you know, creating this sort of antagonistic struggle between you and another commenter or a different position. So, yeah, I mean, the algorithms certainly have to change. Transitioning, or rather shifting gears and back into the text of the op-ed, I'd like to read just a bit of the conclusion here, because I think it really kind of wraps up a lot of what we're talking about. And, you know, writing and fiction just has a way of showing us the implications of what we're doing now that we just can't necessarily see. And I think this really sums it up very, very well when he talks about content regulation on these social media platforms. Cory Doctorow wrote in the New York Times, "We decided to vest platforms with state-like duties to punish them for their domination. In doing so, we cemented that domination. Only the largest companies can afford the kinds of filters we've demanded of them." We've said that all the time, by the way. And that means that any would-be trust buster who wants to break up the companies and bring them to heel first must unwind the mesh of obligations we've ensnared the platforms in and build new state-based mechanisms to perform these duties. Our first mistake was giving the platforms the right to decide who could speak and what they could say. Our second mistake was giving them the duty to make that call a billion times a day. Powerful stuff.
Yeah.
Really, I mean, just really slices away the fat and gets at the implications of everything that we're facing right now. I mean, fantastic stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it, you know, it gets to the back to the philosophy of John Perry Barlow and the original cyberspace pioneers with the you know, the manifested Declaration of the Independence of Cyberspace that Rob T. Firefly is reminding me of at the moment, you know, and this sort of free, almost libertarian like ideal of it should just be hands off and let's see what happens, because when the internet did exist like that, you know, it wasn't nearly as populated as it is now. But it just felt like a better place.
Well, yeah, but we have had hands off on many things, and we've seen what happens. So obviously, I don't think speech and state run should ever be in the same sentence. But as people, as citizens, we need to rethink what we are doing, what our obligations are, what our expectations are, and see if we can come up with a better way of doing this. Because I guarantee you hand this over to any government, it's going to be worse.
I hear that just in that last part that, you know, it's him saying, you know, be very cautious, you know, world and society, regulators, political parties, be cautious about how you handle this problem. And we need to think of creative ways to address it that put forth something that is current for today. And I think when you're talking about the nascent emergence of these ideals, yeah, that was great. You could walk away and people would read a newspaper, pick up a magazine, go put on a record and tune their radio. Everyone is depending on these networks now. They're living on these networks now. So the distinct reliance is it was a small part of life. Now it is the lion's share of how life occurs for a lot of people and how they experience information and networked communities. So to that end, you know, their dependence and reliance is magnified, I think, in contrast. So we need to think critically about how those gatekeepers are managed without falling into this sort of slippery slope, I think.
I think you touch upon something that we often talk about here as kind of a theme of embracing new technology but not relinquishing the old technology, continuing to use that as kind of a baseline, embracing new ways of doing things with some caution because they're new and they might break. But, you know, you're talking about listening to music online. Well, you know, you could download something online, but somebody can change the ID3 tags and your MP3 and make it to be something completely false. The online publication that you see on a website could be completely made up because there are no actual standards that they have to adhere to, like a newspaper or a magazine. So while these things are great, while they open up doors, they can also be abused, and they can also cheapen and minimize the trust that we have in general for things that are true, for things that people spend a lot of time putting together. So I think, you know, we need to have these new things, these new ways of doing things, but also hold on to the newspapers, hold on to the records and the bookstores and just those things that have mattered throughout time, that have formed this cornerstone where we all kind of come together and share ideas.
Yeah, it's this whole thing about like the way we interact with data and things that we once were things we used to have and own in some fashion, but these days we just depend on to be there when we need it. There was recently, I think it was today or yesterday, the servers for the Ouya console, which was a games console that came out 5-6 years ago that was meant to be a new low price thing with all these innovative games on it, the servers for the games were shut down because the console was not a success. But so anybody who had them and used them for their original purpose can no longer. The things are hackable, so you can tweak them to still do stuff if you want to, but you cannot use this thing in the manner in which it was originally sold. But meanwhile, I can take a 30-year-old Nintendo cartridge and plug it into a working console, and the same thing happens that happened back then.
I mean, I want to build off, I think, three things that you all said. I mean, Rob's example, you mentioned, Emmanuel, this idea that we shouldn't relinquish old tech. And Kyle's, I think, great point about that people have become very reliant on these particular types of networks. And I think, you know, they're all valid points. But I think some of that reliance on these networks should actually turn into self-reliance now. And the old tech that we shouldn't abandon is our actual brains. You know, what's in between our ears, the gray matter that we have. I believe that the power of education, the power of providing people an understanding of what is rational, what is logical, and what is not rational, and what is illogical, is so much more powerful in distinguishing what's absolute malarkey. You know, I would use a stronger phrase if it wasn't for FCC versus Pacifica, and what is a legitimate argument. And I think that we really, instead of putting money in, instead of putting all this effort into all these new regulatory regimes that are designed to stamp out fascism and shovel you-know-what against the tide, I think our time and effort would be better spent on education. And going back to philosophy, that's what really teaches you to think rationally, to understand what an argument is, to deconstruct an argument, because ideas are things that take a lot of time to cultivate, to unpack. And bad ideas are very, very easy to spot if you have a well-trained mind. I think that education would stem the tide of white nationalism. I think it would stem the tide of prejudice. And I think it would stem the tide of terrorists' ability to radicalize weak minds on the Internet. I mean, I think education should be a foreign policy priority in the fight against terrorism. And it should be a domestic priority in the fight against fascism and disinformation and misinformation campaigns. I think, honestly, that's the only way we're going to ever effectively combat this over the long term. The old tech that we have in between our brains should be the bulwark of our democracy.
Yeah, I'm with that. And the education thing is an important point from the perspective of how a lot of the power business plans and the corporations that emerged from the cool factor as social media and like Web 2.0 services started up and the variety of things in the market began to fall into basically these now three or four companies. And a lot of the gobs and gobs of cash was made from young people embracing this technology and using it in fun ways. Also the handsets allowing a lot more features and things to be processed on the handsets themselves. But the advertising models themselves made just an incredible amount of money for these companies. And I think instead of them investing in more technologies that consume people's time and have them really addicted almost or dependent, instead of putting cash into those projects or cash into filtering that goes down this slippery slope, I do think education's critical. Because when we go to like Maker Faire events or when we talk to kids that are hacking, you know, their understanding of the Internet is even it may be you know, less historically evident, but it is an understanding that it is more than just an app or a game that they're playing. And that's the cool thing, I think, people who live through these changes in technology and the other generations of hackers can pass along, is that, you know, these little apps and these sites that you're visiting aren't necessarily all of the Internet. And it's the companies that have profited so much that want to keep the engagement and keep the algorithms, as E had pointed out, either going one way for like just reinforcing good things or antagonizing you, or what I suspect is really going on, E, both. I think a lot of what I've read is that there's a lot of positive affirmation, and then the algorithms start to flood with in stuff that might agitate or create anxiety and thus engagement, but keep you on the platform. If we only went with stuff that was abhorrent to users, the users would leave the platform, and thus the business model for these companies wouldn't proliferate in quite the same way. But so, absolutely, putting money into education so that young people that are exploring this technology, yeah, perhaps can push the boundaries of how it's used and do cool things with cool new services, but also get an idea that, yeah, perhaps this is a good tool for knowing, you know, what's up or talking to people or doing funny things, but that's distinct from the other many and varied resources that are accessible through the Internet itself.
Yeah, you mentioned the cool factor, and that's a bit that I've always found really fascinating because we've got a good range of ages in this room, I think, but we all, I think it's safe to say, grew up as the web did, where we watched it become a thing that was in general use, you know, in our time using it. And the cool factor, like as social media grew as a function of the web itself and as a thing that the general public was using, there was this feel about the beginning of it, like it was a cool new thing to explore, but it was just part of the web. It wasn't the reason for being for the web. And there were lots of companies that tried to make things happen, and people would hang out on one for a while, then it wouldn't be cool anymore. They'd all go to the next thing. You know, a lot of us went from like LiveJournal to MySpace to whatever else, and a million companies that are dead now. But Facebook was the first time that one company managed to keep hold of its user base, and as a result of that has grown into like a 900-pound gorilla with the power to change the world for the much worse.
Yeah, it's amazing to me, too. Yeah, that's, I think, the power of what we can communicate and create understanding, like the things that perhaps early adopters for that generation might think are really cool and like, yo, this is the end all and the be all of the internet. Why? Because you have weird social media endorsements, or you feel like, you know, you have a huge audience, even though you're just basically known on some platform, through I don't know, endorsements or whatever the heck they're doing. I think it needs to be that people, get why other people would look at that and say, no, that's really kind of lame, actually. Like, that's not doing much for the Internet. It is designed for you to think it is cool and it is the only place for you to be. But it's just one tiny aspect of this really powerful tool that you can make up how you use it. You can make up these services for yourself. You don't, you know, and that's, I think, where we lose some of it, is that, like, well, it's hard, or it takes being a geek. Well, hello, like, we're hackers. That's the point. Like, that's what we're about, is getting into how all of this stuff comes about. So I think realizing that, yeah, okay, getting some stupid endorsement on a photo sharing site is not like the pinnacle of internet success, right? Even starting 10 crappy startups is not necessarily the pinnacle of success when using technology. You know, just because you're in Silicon Valley doesn't mean you've made it. So like, there are all these sort of misnomers, I think, floating around, and it's about that education and intergenerational learning that someone who might think they're onto something can maybe understand how it fits into the grand scheme, and like why others might think, nah, that's just kind of limiting you. You know, that both are valid, right? It's cool to see new stuff, but it's cool to understand why others aren't into it, and the sort of the ramifications of a lot of things we discuss here.
Well, a lot of it is so very fleeting, you know. So you're involved in something that's extremely popular right now, but in 10 years, is anybody going to remember it? Is anybody going to read what you were writing? I think that is the measure. If you are involved in something that is more or less timeless, that is still of interest years, decades down the road, then you're contributing something, not just to an immediate gratification type of thing, but also to our development, our history. And I think that's something we need to focus more attention on, because so many things that I see these days online, they disappear. I mean, we say that the Internet is permanent. When you put something online, it's there forever. It's not. It disappears really, really quickly. And it gets swallowed up in all kinds of noise. Sure, there are things on there that you'd rather not be on there, but there's a lot on there that you think is going to last, and it doesn't, because we don't do enough to preserve it.
I sort of wish we were fundraising because it would have been a perfect segue to the Hacker Digest that you create, right?
It's so true what you say. Yeah, I just want to reiterate. I mean, even I know for our own projects and things like that, just keeping up software and security, stuff we're talking about all the time, we hammer it constantly, you know, keeping your equipment up to date and, you know, backing things up. All of those things, I know for our own site, we marvel at, you know, oh, you know, where did that go? Oh, we backed that up here because we were updating this. We're always moving things around. And I think you need to think of the internet as a very alive, fluid, constantly morphing, constantly changing and refreshing. And yeah, there may be backups somewhere, but who has them? You know, mm-hmm. Where are the things that you thought were permanent or mirrored somewhere? Unless you're building an understanding and controlling, it's kind of, you'll wake up and be like, oh, well. And guarantee, if you haven't seen it or you haven't felt that way and you're just, you know, the most you can confront about technology is, like, fear of missing out, I got news for you. Once you see a couple of these, like, platforms and things go away, you'll start to see this pattern of people trying a business thing and it maybe consumes with data or it is intertwined into people's lives and then it just disappears. So it's probably that a lot of the people that are being turned into just solely dependent on these platforms, they could probably do a better job, you know, but they're not being inspired. And I really hope that's something that that people are able to embrace and to build in the face of companies like this and you know, getting attention from bureaucracy and from government and, you know, of course, hearing people like us talk about, hey, this might be a worthy point of alarm in the grand scheme of history and what the future will hold for us.
Well, as I threatened to do earlier, I'm opening up the phone lines, 212-209-2877, if you want to join the conversation. We had a listener write in, Flip Chan wrote to us asking about, I'll read the letter. I'm sure you guys heard the news about Chelsea Manning going into personal bankruptcy. I heard Chelsea speak at Hope, and if she is not a hero of the hacker community, I am not sure what we have become. I think we should do a Chelsea Manning fundraiser in order to raise capital to help her, 2600 fundraiser event, or a campaign similar to Free Kevin. Reaching out to you because you have an audience that cares about her. She's a hero of the hacker community, and it's up to us as fellow hackers to help her. I agree on all that, Flip Chan, absolutely. But I think we should look towards the official Chelsea Manning website for that, rather than have all kinds of different fundraisers going on. Let's focus on one source to make it simple and also to keep updated, because we don't always have the latest updates. Website xychelsea.is. That's xychelsea.is. And on there, you can contribute, you can get updates, you can hear all the latest news. It's really an important site. And, you know, I say that for people that agree with what she's done or disagree with what she's done, because no matter how you feel about it, the conversation is a vital one to have, and she certainly is somebody who is a figure in history and does not deserve to be in prison.
Well, I mean, I might disagree with that slightly, only because I think that she, you know, is somewhat irrationally deciding to disobey a grand jury subpoena. I don't really understand
that. And somehow all the Trump people manage to walk around freely when they do the same thing. We don't have time for this debate right now.
Well, perhaps.
We only have a few minutes, but I want to take a phone call.
Sure.
All right? And we can certainly hammer this out on the street afterwards if anybody wants to watch.
Or arm wrestle.
Sure. Good evening. You're on Off the Hook. Go ahead.
Hi.
Hi, what's up?
I just wanted to say that I think that you're coming after the news and Trump Watch. It's the perfect lead-in for you. And I don't want to turn off the radio for an hour and
Don't turn off the radio. Listen to this new show that's coming next week. And just know that we'll be driving in a much more relaxed manner and not dealing with everybody else that's driving at the same time.
When you got back to 7 p.m., you were nostalgic about how great it was and how glad you were.
Yeah, but I'm always like that, no matter where I go. That's
well,
just how
I
am.
7.
All right, well, that's a vote for 7, but it's not really something that we're taking votes on. It's kind of...
I said it. People who could only listen at 7 should call in.
Yeah, no.
If you make me tune out at 7 because you're not on at 7, you can't count on me tuning back at 8.
Well, you know what? We can call you and remind you. How about that?
Are you going to?
Well, we don't have caller ID, but if we did, we could be evil like that. That would be a good service, actually. Hey, it's your wake-up call. Time to listen to Off the Hook.
Yeah, you could offer that service, but are you going to?
It's something we're going to take under advisement. I like saying that. All right, well, we hope to hear your voice at that later hour.
And I hope you stay where you are.
All right, well, we'll see what happens. Go ahead, Rob.
Okay,
well, I think one thing that's always been central here at BAI is giving new voices a chance. And I, for one, really want to hear the show that's going to be on at 7 because I think that's something that we do need more of on these airwaves, and I look forward to listening to it. So, you know, you don't have to turn on the radio. You can just leave it on for an hour longer, and we'll still be there. There's so much more to discover on the station than just us.
And for those people who are very literal-minded, I did not just make up that show. That show is being planned, and this was not our decision, but it's one that I think is a good one because, just for the driving alone. So there's good and bad.
And look, I can attest to the fact that, you know, there is a much lower probability of Emmanuel and Kyle missing the show, you know, at the 8 o'clock session, because these guys, I've never seen them so stressed out as they have been over the last few weeks.
I mean, still haven't taken my coat off.
I know. And why are you wearing a winter coat?
Well, that's the second part of that. That's why I'm sweating. Well, you know, we'll talk about my issues later.
Is that real fur?
Let's take a phone call. Good evening. You're on Off the Hook. Oh. See, that's what happens. That's what happens when we talk too long.
I miss dial tone.
Good evening. You're on Off the Hook. Speak up.
Good evening.
Hi.
I'd rather have things stay the way they were. I've been away for so long that technology's definitely blown past me.
Wow, where have you been?
I've been in federal prison.
You've been in federal prison? Oh, my goodness, wow.
It's Stormbringer.
Oh, my God, it's Stormbringer. You're a name from the past, and you've been in there for a very long time, decades, actually. Welcome back, and I'm sorry for the state that the world is in. We did not keep in as good a shape as it was when you left, but I sure hope that it's not too traumatic.
It's gone totally crazy in technology. It's like I was sitting in the train, and the world just—we were still sitting at this train station, and the world just kind of kept on going.
Wow!
But it boggles my mind that I can have a small, tiny computer in my hand that blew away anything that I had or was out back in 2000. I mean, I've been locked up since Clinton was president.
My goodness. I can't even imagine. I know with Kevin Mitnick, there was some culture shock when he got out, learning technology that had changed. But that was a fraction of the time that you were away for. I can't even imagine how you're adjusting to all this. The things, and in a way, it's inspirational to us because you can see something that we might take for granted and say, my God, this is amazing. Is there anything that leaps out?
Well, I can only sum one thing up, 1984.
Uh-huh. Yeah, that hasn't changed.
There's just so much surveillance and things like that. And it's just totally different. In fact, AI has come a long way. I've noticed a lot of things online that kind of blew my mind. That when I typed something in, I was trying to create an account, and when I typed in the first few letters of one of my old accounts, the whole account that I had popped up, and it just kind of blew my mind that
wow.
Something from 20 years ago is still hiding in on some hard drive somewhere, and the AI picked it right up.
That's amazing. Stormbringer, one thing I remember is your propensity for writing and just the technical knowledge that you had, and I imagine you still have, but I really think there's a book in there for you to write about how things have changed and your observations. I hope that you're able to share your impressions because they really are very unique at this stage, you know, just emerging like this?
Well, I sure have done a lot of writing over the years, and you've received a lot of letters, but that could be possibly in the works. There's a lot of knowledge there, and I've kept up with a lot of things. I've done a lot of reading on the inside, and now I just need to try to get my life in order and start looking for employment.
All right. Well,
by the way, I'm calling.
Go ahead.
I'm calling from a place called Hope Village.
Oh, really? Hope Village, huh? Well, that sounds inspiring. Well, I certainly hope somebody hires you, because you are very technically adept. Even if you've been away for a while, I know that new technology will be no match for you. It's something you'll catch on to very quickly.
Yeah, and as Alex said earlier this evening, the one tool that keeps working just as it ever did is the human brain, and you've still got that with you. So mm-hmm. I think you're gonna be successful in whatever you pointed at.
Absolutely. You know, one of the things a lot of people said, well, things have changed, but really they haven't. I mean, bits are still ones and zeros.
Mm-hmm.
They just move faster nowadays, and, you know, storage has gotten bigger, and, you know, but really we're still moving bits.
Absolutely. That's what it's about. All right, well, Stormberg, great to hear from you, and please keep in touch. We want to hear how things are going as you get initiated back into society. I'm sure you have stories to tell from inside as well.
Hey, you mind if I give off my email address in case there's potential employers?
Go right ahead.
It's bill@stormbringer.tv.
Okay, and I hope you are inundated with offers. The people who hire you certainly will not be sorry for that. And great to hear from you again.
All right. Hopefully see one of the cons in the future.
Yes.
Take care, guys.
Take care. Wow. That was a voice in the past. We have not heard from him in many years. Really, really incredible. Let's see if we can squeeze in one more phone call. Good evening. You're on Off the Hook.
Good evening, folks.
Hi. What's on your mind?
This is Bobson.
Oh, it's Bobson. Bobson from Bulgaria. Wow. We've spanned the globe tonight. What's on your mind?
Well, I wanted to call in about the 7 p.m. New York time slot being.
Well, I know what you're going to say. You're in Bulgaria. It's already late there. Now it's another hour later, so you're not going to be in favor of this, are you?
Well, I like the 7 p.m. of New York time slot better than the 8. It's just, and that goes, I'm guessing, for your listeners in Finland, South Africa, Egypt, and Romania, what else is there?
Pretty much every country
in that time zone.
It's better for people in California, you know, it's earlier for them, right?
Yeah, but, yeah, 4 p.m. in California gives them an excuse to wait for an hour and let the traffic go down and... So
well,
that's what I was thinking.
I hope somebody is happy about this someplace. But you know, a lot of people listen to us online, too. They download the show. They listen to it whenever they damn well please.
Yeah, don't discount the time shifting that's going on as far as people catching it later.
But I do hope, Bobson, you are able to keep listening live, because one thing I always enjoy, like when I miss the show for whatever reason and I'm home in front of my computer, is signing on to the listeners IRC. And you're a constant presence there, and always nice to chat with while we listen to the show together.
How do people do that for those people who have never done that?
Yeah, talking about old school social media. If you use Internet Relay Chat, which is IRC, our server is irc.2600.net. And on there are many channels, and one of them will be pound Off the Hook, which when you listen during the show, when you're online during the show, you can get on there and talk to some other listeners.
If there are any, because lately there hasn't been too many people.
Well, maybe because we haven't told people how to do that, so that maybe now there'll be an influx of more people. But Bobson, anything else before we move on to another call?
Well, can't think of anything. But now I know I had a question for you, but I can't remember it. So do have a wonderful evening, and thank you for your time.
Well, thanks for calling, and good to hear from you. You know, Bobson sounds pretty tired at 7 o'clock, All right, and no doubt he'll sound more tired at 8 o'clock. But maybe Bobson can wake up early instead. Go to sleep early, wake up at you know 8 o'clock Eastern time, which is what 3 in the morning their time. I don't know. Can't make everybody happy. I wish I make somebody happy. Good evening. You're on Off the Hook.
Good evening. I also like the 7 p.m. better, and the reason is that there are two stores I like to go to that close at 9. So if you're on from 8 to 9, I can't get to them. Unless, of course, I went before, but most of the time that wouldn't happen.
Do they deliver, maybe?
No. Uh-huh. These are like grocery, like a health store and another kind of store like that. Uh-huh. But also, I'm glad to hear that this was not your decision, and that makes me feel a little better. And I remember you were happy to get back to 7, but it's good to hear that they, you know, wanted something else in that slot. And the only other thing I could say is the man who was in prison, I missed. Well, I got his email, so I can ask him. But what was he in prison for? You don't have to tell me because I was tuned off the radio because I was, hoping to get picked up on the phone.
I don't want to give misinformation, so I'm not going to say what I believe it is, but it's easy to find out, and you can certainly ask him, and he'll probably give you all the details. But I can tell you this, he's a good guy and did not deserve that.
And I just... thought I had missed something. That's why I asked you about it. Okay, thanks so much.
Thank you for calling.
Wonderful show.
Thank you so much.
Mm-hmm.
And we are in the waning moments of our 7 to 8 slot. I'll miss it here. I really will. Next week will be completely different. We'll be arriving at this hour instead of leaving at this hour. I'm not sure. It's going to take some getting used to. We might be confused. We might walk in at the wrong time and make fools of ourselves. But and then be leaving at 9 o'clock at night instead of 8 o'clock at night. But, you know, I have a feeling as humans, as hackers, we'll adjust. We'll get used to it.
I mean, it's going to feel like daylight savings time all over again.
Oh, don't say that. That's coming up soon, isn't it?
Oh, God. Yes, probably.
Yeah.
I know. I'm going to miss this slot, too. I tend to agree with all of the listeners out there, but we make the most of any situation. I think we'll do just as well at 8 p.m.
All right, well,
and we'll see you then.
Here's hoping. OTH@2600.com, our email address. Tune in again next week at this time when we'll be just about to go on the air. Yeah, we'll see how that goes. Good night.
Hi, I'm Laura Flanders of The Laura Flanders Show. The Left Forum is right around the corner, and they have generously donated weekend passes to WBAI listener supporters who make a $50 pledge in support of WBAI.